We're going to have a look back at 2022 in this month's Corian Report, as it was the end of the year for December. We look at it every month, but now we've got a whole year to look back on with David Bacher of Corian. Happy New Year, David. Let's hope it's a much better year in 2023 than 2022.
Yeah, thank you, Alec. Yeah, well, hopefully it wasn't a great year for investors, so we look forward to new year and new beginnings.
How bad was 2022? Just put it in context for us relative to other years.
In short, Alec, it was not a great year. Global equities ended the year down 18%, while global bonds ended the year also, down significantly. So taking these two main asset classes together, you had one of the worst years in decades. And I actually think that 2002 might even been worse for many retail investors who I think seem to get caught up in the whole fourth industrial revolution at any cost stampede. You know, the NASDAQ, for example, ended down 33%. And many dinner talk favorites of 2021, such as Tesla and Bitcoin, they lost about two-thirds of their value. So, not a great year for global investors. But fortunately for our local equities, we in South Africa actually fared significantly better than the global markets. In US dollars, South African equities was down about 8%. But in rand terms, our market was actually up in the green by about 4%.
And that is very much bucking the trend. It was interesting, towards the end of last year, I had a chat with Sean Pesch, who warned then that Tesla could drop another 50%. He also said Amazon could drop another 50%. He wasn't right on that one, but my goodness, what happened to Tesla in the last quarter? Because it is such a very, very popular stock amongst South African investors. In fact, I think on Easy Equities, it's the number one held offshore share amongst their huge hundreds of thousands of client base.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'm not an expert on Tesla, but I do think that Tesla got caught up in the whole growth outlook, where growth investors were pricing lots of shares for perfection. And when you have rising interest rates, your forecast in terms of discounting future cash flows back becomes a lot more treacherous. And Tesla, along with many shares that were trading at very, very high PEs, really got unstuck. And I think that just goes hand in hand with what I said earlier. A lot of people were buying shares because they were the household names. They were very good companies. But, a good company doesn't mean necessarily a good investment. The price you pay for an asset is equally important.
That's such a critical point, that one. Cathy Wood from ARK Funds continues to bang the drum and say that this is just a correction, and that if you take a longer-term view, these fourth industrial revolution shares, companies rather, will have share prices far, far higher than the current level. And there's still a little bit of that, which brings me to the real question, which is, have we seen capitulation yet? Every single cycle, investment cycle, you get to a point where there's capitulation. And I'm talking here specifically of these tech shares, the big tech stocks, where people say, no, I won't touch them again. And that's the time to buy them.
I don't think it's a time to rush back in. You've got to look at where we are now, where we are in terms of inflation, where we are in terms of interest rates. And most importantly, at Corian, we focus on valuations. And these shares are nowhere near as expensive than they were going into 2022. But they're certainly still not cheap. So as a house at Corian, a lot of the shares that you mentioned, those tech shares, come from the US. The US has had a 10-year bull market. And we still think that there's value elsewhere in the world. So as a house at Corian, those big tech companies, we still very much in the camp of being underweight rather than rushing in and buying at these levels.
So capitulation hasn't happened yet. In short,
I don't think capitulation has happened. I don't think it's as bad an investment as was a year ago, but I just think there's more value elsewhere in the world.
What lessons have we learned, David, from the past year?
Mr. Market always teaches us lessons, but I think last year was was a one for the books. So lessons that come to mind, probably lesson one, don't lose sight of fundamentals. Investors put a lot of money in what we at Corian call flock stocks, companies that have done exceptionally well over the last decade and become, as I said earlier, household names. But, you know, as I said earlier, great companies don't necessarily mean great investments. Lesson two probably is keep investments simple. Don't get caught up in things you don't understand and the hype. Know what you're investing in. A lot of people invest in the likes of crypto and NFTs and without really understanding it. These are high risk, unregulated investments, and people needed to be a lot more cautious than they were. And I think the last of main lesson that I probably would reflect on is remember that, you know, equities are by nature very volatile. You've got to take a long-term view, and one should only invest in equities if you can endure that volatility and have a reasonably long time horizon. Over 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years, equities will reward you for that volatility, but you have to be patient.
It's almost like the old basics have now come back into play. The value investors are saying, yes, you must buy a company when you're getting it for 60 or 70 cents in the dollar. Do your analysis, see that the stock is cheap. If something is below its intrinsic value, in time it will give you a return. If you buy it above its intrinsic value, in time you will lose money. So it's interesting when you think of that as another kind of clarification of the lesson that you've just outlined.
Correct. I mean, when you have interest rates at all-time lows, you know, people were really just taking on risk. That distorts value. And, you know, if you look at long-term cycles, I'm talking 50, 100 years, value investing, you know, generally rewarded investors. But over the last decade, you know, if you were a value investor, you really could have been a really great investment professional, but you were just, you know, in the wrong place at the wrong time and look quite foolish. And 10 years really, I know it sounds a long time, but really, given the interest rate cycle, I don't think it was a good reflection on the capability of a lot of very good investment professionals in South Africa and the world. And thankfully, last year, you know, they more than made up for what has been a very tired time for those that kind of investment style.
COVID not only hurt economies, it also hurt rational investing. But it's over now. COVID's behind us. We haven't got our masks on anymore. And by the same token, rational investing is back in fashion. David, I'm going to put up on the screen now some of the graphs taken from your Corian report. And for those who haven't been following it yet, every month, David and the team at Corian compile very soon after the month end. This is a little unusual because I was on leave most of the time. I think your team was still hard at work. But within a couple of days of the month end, we actually pick it up, which gives you an understanding of the past month. We're going to look at the past year, though, given that we've now got the full 12 months. And I'm going to just pick up here, share my screen with you on exactly on a couple of these charts. Or tables, rather. And maybe you can just talk us through them, David. Starting off with this one, 2022's winning and losing. I apologize. I've got the wrong chart up. So let me just get to the very first one. There we go. December's winners and losers in asset classes, equities, and then top 40 best performers, worst performers. Perhaps let's just start out there. Property is an interesting one to see that in December it started to come well, but if we look on the longer term, as we will in a moment, it's had a very, very torrid even the past year. So is it time now to start reconsidering property? Is that what we're saying?
Well, I think if you look at property in the last 6 months, it's rebounded quite a lot. So it's always dependent on what your starting period. You know, as you said, property shares got hit very hard by COVID. I think the property sector now has seen the worst of it. It's like loan-to-value ratios, and its vacancies are looking a lot more, you know, promising. So, you know, from a Corian perspective, It's probably not our preferred asset class. I mean, we'll probably still prefer local equities to local property, but certainly a lot more compelling than it was a few months ago.
And you can see there in December, the Rand did well. Bottom of the pile, global equities. Now, this would have sucked a lot of people in again. It's almost like during 2022, one of the features was sucker rallies. You had this move up in share prices. People thought, well, this is it. It's over. The downturn is over. Let's get back in. And my goodness, they got smacked again. Happened again in December.
Correct. I mean, if you would remember in our October interview, we ran with the heading local is lacquer. And I think there's a few reasons why, but the two main reasons was, firstly, the dollar was very, very strong. So, you know, if you're converting these returns back into rands, you know, the rand actually appreciated relative to the dollar. But also relative valuations, the U.S. is about 65% of global equities. So when you have the U.S. at high valuations and that takes a bit of a breather, that's going to hit your global equity market. So you had two factors, currency and stretch valuations, was the reason why we thought global equities wasn't the place to be. But having said that, emerging markets last month and last quarter have started to bounce back. So there are other places to invest other than the US. But because the US makes up a large portion of the global equities, it always really drives that number.
Interesting to see Raynet, which is a ultimate value stock, as being one of the best performers of the top 40 the best performer of the top 40 on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange in December. But there's Naspers and Prosus. That was a special situation, I guess, rebounding in China. Investec, big share buybacks there. AngloGold enjoying a run from the gold price. But on the other side, on the worst top performers of the top 40, there's some big losers there in stocks that, well, I suppose have all got a story to themselves, but my goodness, double-digit drops for Anglo-American Platinum, Sunlum, and ShopRite.
Correct. I think all for their own unique reasons, really. I'd just like to maybe touch on the Naspers and process that you spoke about earlier. I mean, if you think about that share since October, that share has rallied 62%. Now, that's probably one of our biggest shares in the market. So I think a lot of the asset managers or investors, given its weighting, you know, how much underweight they were that stock and did they buy it at the bottom and what they did with it, I think that was a key driver of returns for the last quarter, really.
Well, let's get into those individual returns or those individual areas, the broader sense now for the year as a whole. And I like the fact that you pulled out the 1 year and the 3 years. You can see there that property over 3 years is still the worst performing of the main asset areas. But financials have done well in the past year and seem to be edging off the bottom. So if that's the cycle that's going to continue, then again, property might be not a bad bet for 2023.
Correct. I mean, if you look at financials, and where we've come from, you know, at the back of COVID, everyone is worried about banks and debt provisions, et cetera. A lot of our underlying managers, I mean, I'll give credit to Andrew Vinton from Clucas Gray, who came back at the end of COVID and says the market has completely mispriced banking shares, their capital reserves and their financial position has never been stronger. This is the time to invest. And thankfully, a lot of our managers were overweight that sector. Financials, I think, is about 20% of the index. That's very, very meaningful. And a lot of value managers was in that sector. So given that equities did 3.6% and financials did 10%, that was definitely the place to be if you were investing in South Africa.
Resources have done very well over the last 3 years, hence it's had such an impact on South Africa from taxes or the tax take by the government right through to the JSE indices as well. But industrials, on the other hand, not doing that well. And some of your value and some of your asset managers in your pure equity fund have been talking industrials. Andrew Vincent is pretty keen on them. I know we've changed our Biz News portfolio because of what Andrew and some of the other value managers have been saying. Does it look like industrials, it's not often that you see one of these asset classes losing continuously. And maybe, again, this could be a year to look at some value there.
Correct. I think, you know, what we think we do well at Corin is simplify investing and sectors and make it quite easy to invest. But, you know, the downside of trying to be simple is you lose a lot of the complexity. So the industrial number is also driven largely by NASPAS. So you've got to bear that in mind if you want to go a little bit more deeper. So, you know, given what the rally and the run and the drawdowns that NASPAS has gone, that number is very much impacted by that. But I think the broader South African Inc. play, the mid and small caps have had a strong rally. And I think valuations are still on your side. Obviously, the whole Eskom power manufacturing concerns that we have now is something that is obviously on the top of mind of all investors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's whip through the best and worst funds of the past year. Interesting to see the difference there. You don't really want to go into the individuals. Nice to see Fairtree and PSG doing well in the past year. But if you were in the best performing SA General Equity Fund, you'd have made 16% return, and the worst performing -12%. So there's a high premium on what funds you actually invest in.
Correct. And you know, some companies and asset managers by nature take a lot of risk, and they are very active in the way they manage money. They tell you they are active, and they, you know, looking at the list there, there's managers there who have no consideration for the benchmark. They have a complete bottom-up stock picking view. So what the market does and what their portfolios are very much different at times, and last year was a good example. But along the list, you know, I'm looking at the worst performing. There are some managers there who, you know, through the cycle have done really, really well. And if you believe in that manager, you know, I wouldn't really, really panic. But, you know, having said that as well, it's nice to see some managers like PSG who, if I look back 2 or 3 years ago, were going through a really difficult time. But they positioned their portfolios probably arguably a little bit early for the cycle, but have been rewarded since then. So hats off to them for sticking the course.
And that Fairtree Equity Prescient, that's not a misprint, is it? 21 billion rand size of the fund, almost 22 billion?
No, it's not a misprint. I mean, they're probably the most successful asset manager over the last decade in terms of, I would say, raising assets. But the raising assets has been largely on the back of good performance. They've got a very strong team. They have really called the sector rotations really well, probably better than any manager in South Africa when to get into resources and when to get into industrials. I think they've had like 3 calls over the last decade when they've actually got the timing of that sector rotation right, and that's come out in the numbers. Obviously, there's a lot more to their skill than just 3 calls, but you know they really, really have done well over the last few years.
Well done to Fairtree, and glad we can highlight that. On the high equity, SA High Equity, again here, a big difference. If you'd been in the wrong stocks, as we see on the worst performing funds, you could have been quite hurt. On the other hand, Ned Group Investment Managed Fund, PSG there again. Nice to see Alan Gray actually making some kind of a comeback.
Correct. I think if there's one snapshot of, you know, how value managers did versus growth managers, the high equity space is probably the perfect example. Majority of managers on that sheet and who you mentioned are value managers. And on the worst performing are the guys who were in high tech growth shares. So that played out. And just for your listeners, when we talk about high equity, you know, those are generally your retirement funds where by regulation you're limited to 75% in equities. So this kind of portfolio is not only about equities, it's about your asset allocation, how much bonds you have in cash, but you generally do have, as the name suggests, a high allocation to equities.
Good work by Walter Aylett as well, a veteran. And then low equity, SA low equity, again, quite a big change, although not quite as significant on the worst performing. I see Magnus Hastings' Brenthurst gets a mention there, not an admirable mention in this case, but 3.2% down, given the way that they are going offshore, I suppose, is manageable. But on the other hand, some interesting names there too. Once again, PSG.
Correct. I think, low equity, as the name suggests, has a maximum of 40% to equities. This is quite a nice category, we think, to judge all-round skills, because you have to have such a big allocation to bonds. You have to have a big allocation to cash and equities, properties. So it's pretty much the all-rounders category. But once again, those funds who took a lot of risk in terms of the growth sector would be at the bottom. You mentioned a couple of names who have been punting, going offshore, and that cycle got a bit unstuck last year.
Yeah, cautious wasn't exactly the right place to be. And then finally, the winning and losing funds in global equity. And once more, PSG is up there on the way down. Old Mutual. Oh, they get one of the top funds, one of the worst funds. I suppose they could feel it's, 50-50. Is there much to read from this, excepting that the worst performers really lost you quite a lot of money?
No, I think in the context of what the markets did overseas, when we spoke about global equities being down 18%, I don't think that's too worrying. You could expect that. As you said, hats off to PSG. It's nice to see an asset management house who's consistent across categories and different asset classes. It means that they've got implies that they've got a consistent house view that gets filtered across the whole portfolio range, instead of what sometimes you have, a house with best and worst performances in each category. At least, that's a house-driven investment process.
Mm. Well, David, we've done an unusual focus this time around. Thank you for sharing the Corin report and for our monthly updates. Just when we have a look at 2023 to close off with, the challenges that are likely to face us this year?
Sure. There's always our risks. There's always inevitably a ton of reasons why not to invest. And investing is always about weighing up the upside potential versus the downside risk. So I don't want to come across as a raging bear given last year's fall in most asset prices. But I think the risk that worries us the most at Corin is, if earnings for the year ahead are much worse than expected. We're coming off all-time high corporate margins, and with inflation and recessionary pressures in place, earnings of companies have the potential to really roll over. On Friday, we start to get some big names coming to market with their fourth quarter results. So I think a lot of people need to watch that carefully.
Yeah, a disappointment on the downside on Wall Street results in a very significant impact on the share price. But David Bacher from Corin with the Corin Report, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.